past week was my 25th anniversary with my dear wife, Lisa. And we got to celebrate that. Yeah, that's something. We have been through a lot together. This past week, we kind of did a mini staycation and spent some time together, just the two of us without any distractions, unless you count me. And in the afternoon, one day on Tuesday, we had such a beautiful day, and she walked in and said, "It's beautiful outside. You should go outside." And feeling inspired and romantic from my anniversary being so present, I said, "You're beautiful, inside or outside." Aw. and then to just up the brownie points a little bit there, I said, "You're amazing. You're beautiful." And feeling inspired from the series that we just came out of, I said, "You're my goddess." And she replied appropriately, "Oh, God." Which I thought was sweet, actually. And I said, "You don't have to call me that, but it is appreciated." Yeah. To appreciate the divinity in each other. Now, we're grateful for how we change and grow. We're talking about plants this morning, and what a perfect example of the fleeting, beautiful, glorious nature, the temporary nature of the things that grow on this earth. It's not a surprise that flowers and plants have been a part of sacred ceremonies, temples, spiritual gatherings for as long as human beings have been around. Some of the earliest archaeological grave sites discovered that humans have always had a fascination with plants and recognize our connection to it and to the plant world. But growing up, as I did, in a Christian environment, I believed the plant world, which was part of the earth, was something to be subdued. And I bought into the message. I kind of assimilated it because it was part of the water, the air that I breathed, that the plant world and the greenery that surrounds us is a commodity. It's something that we should both take care of, but also something that can be commoditized. Thank you. It's something that we've lost connection with. And specifically, I was told that there are good plants, and then there are dangerous plants. And there are plants that you should stay away from. The title of this talk is called Holy Smokes, which was a good follow-up to last week, Holy Ground. I'm kind of blending these words that feel weird to me, coming from a deconstructed worldview, and I'm trying to apply them in a different way. When I say holy, when I say sacred, it's recognizing the importance of these things in our life. I grew up without any of what I now refer to as the plant medicines, but especially cannabis was something that was drilled into me from the war on drugs growing up, was dangerous. And tobacco was addictive. And all of these plants, from the wines that are produced from the grapes and the grains that we produce our alcohol, all I saw was destruction and damage. And I was seeing a separate world from me that I wasn't connected to. I was taught that there was no wisdom to be found in the plant world, and that the wisdom that we had came from us as humans. I've come to believe that the plants that we share this world with have a wisdom, have a depth that is different than the wisdom that we have. And so much of what we're told to fear has more to do with control than actual truth. And that brings us to where we are today. Like me, many of you either grew up with and assimilated probably some of the message from the notorious war on drugs. And there's a shared cultural mythology for us, especially here in the United States, and especially in the last 50 to 75 years. We grew up with the frying pan, cracking the egg in there. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Remember that? I grew up in Nancy Reagan's Just Say No era. And the DARE t-shirts, DARE to keep kids off drugs. It's interesting, isn't it, how we use language to provide kind of a barrier, a separation. Instead of recognizing a plant as a medicine, as it's been for thousands of years, we call it a drug and demonize it and try to control it. We're taught that drugs are inherently dangerous, without nuance, without history or context. And we absorbed the message that good people, good citizens, especially good Christians as I grew up, good people don't do drugs. Good people stay away from things like that. One of the most effective PR campaigns in modern history was in 1971 when Nixon began his war on drugs. And it started decades earlier, of course, as this plant, cannabis, had been around for thousands of years, used in ceremonial contexts, started to make its way into the United States, often through Mexican immigrants. And in the 50s, there was the panic, the reefer madness. Anybody see that movie? Of all of these dangerous things that this plant could do, it was highly utilized, especially within communities of color. Mexican immigrants, black, especially musicians, would utilize cannabis in a creative sense, in a unifying sense. And along comes Nixon, and along comes this campaign to rule out what he called public enemy number one. But the real enemy wasn't addiction, it was dissent. Years later, we now know that the war on drugs was never about the plants. The assistant to President Nixon for the domestic affairs, John Ehrlichman, he said this in a testimony after the fact. He said, "You want to know what this war on drugs was really about? The Nixon White House had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be against the war or against black people. But by getting the public to associate hippies with marijuana and blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did." The drug war wasn't about health or safety, it was about control. And it worked. The drug war gave us mandatory minimum sentences. It gave us over-policing. The drug war began the process of the militarization of policing in our country, and especially the disproportionate control over people of color as black people were often criminalized and arrested at a rate far higher than those who did not share their skin color. Mass incarceration is a legacy that we have of the failed war on drugs. We've lost our connection with our planet, with the plants that sustain us. And when we are at war with nature, with plants, we're already losing ground. The very plants that indigenous cultures have for generations utilized in sacred settings have used to expand consciousness, to connect to the world of the unknown and the unseen, to explore and mature and grow. Plants that were often used as rites of passage growing up. In indigenous cultures, spirit walks and sweat lodges and plant medicines and ayahuasca and all of these sacred substances connected people with something deeper than themselves. As human beings, we have longed for answers to what we don't know. And I'll tell you, as someone who deconstructed and as someone who has spent a lot of time breaking down all the things that I used to believe, it's far easier for me to say, okay, these are the things that I no longer believe to be true. But this category for me that keeps growing is this category of things I don't have explanations for, this connection to this natural world. How is it that we as human beings have an endocannabinoid system? We have receptors in our lungs, in various parts of our body, that perfectly match up with the THC and the cannabinoids within the plants of cannabis. And not only do they match up, but it actually brings about alterations in our consciousness, causes us to see things differently, brings about communion and connection. And yet in our country, it was the plant medicines and it was the cannabis that was classified as a type 1 drug, which was, according to the Food and Drug Administration, a substance that had high use of addiction and no medical benefits whatsoever. Meanwhile, after prohibition, we've seen the rise of alcohol as something completely acceptable. We have no problems passing the wine or the whiskey and enjoying a drink with friends. And the plants that we've lost touch with are calling to us still. We don't have to explore altering our consciousness to be in touch with them. But my hope is through this series that we can come to a place of a better relationship with the plants that serve us, that heal us, that protect us, that teach us. Carl Sagan said, "The illegality of cannabis is outrageous, is an impediment, and an impediment to full utilization of a drug which helps produce serenity and insight, sensitivity and fellowship, so desperately needed in this increasingly mad and dangerous world." Timothy Leary, Alan Watts, Ram Dass, previously Richard Alpert, those in the 60s who started to connect to the world of plant medicines in a different way had grand ideas about turning on the world. Timothy Leary, tune in, turn on, and drop out. And while their hearts were in the right place, they missed the sense that we can't wake someone up that doesn't want to be woken up. But yet, there is a wisdom within the plant world and within the medicines and within the trees that we can learn from. And we don't have to smoke it to learn it. We know that just simply forest bathing or walking in the woods. Studies show the physiological changes that happen in our body, the neurochemistry that comes alive as we walk, and as we breathe in the air that our plants, brothers and sisters, breathed out and exchange this relationship of connection. Robin Wall Zimmerer, especially in her newest book, The Serviceberry, talks about this reciprocal nature of connecting with our planets in a way that doesn't just take and consume without stopping and thinking, what am I offering back? And we've lost that. All we offer back to the plant world now is our printed money, or to be more accurate, our plastic cards as we swipe and checkout of the grocery store with plants that were grown probably hundreds, maybe even thousands of miles away. We've lost touch with what our planet is saying to us and speaking to us because we're not listening. We're listening simply with our ears, sometimes with our eyes, but we don't listen with our hearts to what is all around us. So let's be clear, this war on drugs, it didn't just harm people. It severed a sacred relationship between humans and the earth. Indigenous cultures don't talk about drugs, they talk about plant allies. And as I have, especially in the last 5 years, started to spend some time with these plant medicines, I've first begun to shift how I talk about the plant world. You notice I've used that a few times, plant medicines, plant teachers, and yes, that sounds very woo-woo. It sounds like something you would see or hear a hippie say in a yoga shop as he's telling you to connect with something and smudge the room and all that stuff. But if we change the way we think about the plants and the way we talk about plants, it changes the way we interact. Can a plant be a teacher? I would say yes. I would say that I've learned as much by sitting with a tree sometimes as I have going to a great lecture at a university. The lecture at the university fills me with some stuff up here, but connecting with nature puts me back in touch with my roots, with my birthright, my inheritance, where I come from, where I'm going. And now science is catching up. The plants were never the problem. We're finding studies left and right about the benefits of plants and plant medicines in helping to resolve some of these major issues shaping our collective consciousness right now. Our collective consciousness as a human species is traumatized. Beth shared that meditation, which is so true, that sometimes it feels like there are just storms going on all around us. And in a week when I have spent time reading news stories and absorbing all of these things that feel so painful to my heart, I can go for a walk on the shore, in the woods, and I'm reminded of the depth of wisdom that existed far beyond all of these crazy things that we're so wrapped up in today. These plants were never the problem. Our disconnection was. They were never sinful. They were sacred all along. They are sacred. Thich Nhat Hanh said, the flower is made of non-flower elements. We can describe the flower as being full of everything. There's nothing that is not present in the flower. We see sunshine, we see the rain, we see the clouds, we see the earth. We also see time and space in the flower. A flower, like everything else, is made entirely of non-flower elements. The whole cosmos has come together in order to help the flower manifest herself. The flower is full of everything except one thing, a separate self, a separate identity. The flower cannot be by herself alone. The flower has to interbe. I like that wordplay that Thich Nhat Hanh uses. The flower has to interbe with the sunshine, the cloud, and everything in the cosmos. If we understand being in terms of interbeing, then we are much closer to the truth. Even our scientists, our astronauts who travel into space and are studying how to grow plants that can sustain us and nurture us as we travel across space, we're bringing pieces of Earth and earth atmosphere and earth elements into space. That plant is removed from the planet it came from, but it is connected so deeply to the very core of everything that makes up this beautiful world. And it is in our connection to this world that I believe that we can find healing. I would say that for me, in this year, in this season, in this political crisis, when there are so many things to be deeply, deeply discouraged about, when there's so much action to be done, let us pair our action and our anger and our activism with appreciation, with gratitude, with a connection to the world that is speaking to us without words. May we find the healing that comes from the plants who have been our allies, our guides as humans for tens of thousands of years. May we not think that we are so smart, so advanced, so educated as a species that we have somehow evolved past the point of listening to the wisdom of our planets. We're going to continue our Earth altar this week. I'm going to invite Hannah to come back up. She's going to play a little bit behind us. We're going to do it like we did last time. We have two altars here. Last week we brought dirt or soil that reminded us of the planet that we are connected to and are grounded by. This week, as we connect with the plant world, we've invited you to bring a piece of a plant that nourishes or beautifies or heals you or just something that you are connected to. And if you didn't bring it, we have some flower petals, there are some pine sprigs and other elements there. Even if you brought a piece, one thing that I like to do as we're connecting with this world is to fully connect, not just with our eyes, but to touch and to smell, to feel. So as you come up, and we'll start from the back and work our way up, and then you can go back down, and we'll start from the back and come up along the sides. Since these tables are round, you can go on all sides of it. Just take a second or so. Hold your plant, and to, in that moment, offer silent words of gratitude, of appreciation for the living world that sustains us. To recognize we are not separate from, but our well-being is tied up in the interbeing of all things.